Taves, right circle, shoots and scores! A shorthanded goal for Jonathan Taves!
Kubalik in front, he shoots and scores!
Dominic Kubalik,
side of the leaf line, right circle, shoots and scores!
He set it up for Carpenter to slice, and he scores! Patrick Kane has 1,000 NHL points!
It's time for another episode of Blackhawks Crazy. Presented by FanList.
Zach Smith enters the Sabre zone, put it down the right wing here. Doc with the back, and he scores! Kirby Doc!
Chris Bowden and Joe Brand break down the latest storylines concerning your Chicago Blackhawks.
Kane now with three, put it across the break, and shoots, he scores! The Cat connects with a one-timer from the left circle.
Here's Chris Bowden and Joe Brand.
Chicago!
Hi, everyone. Welcome to a fresh edition of the Blackhawks Crazy Podcast. I'm your pre- and post-game host on WGN Radio, Chris Bowden, joined by Blackhawks reporter, weekend sports anchor Joe Brand. Joe, Blackhawks down 2-0 in this series. Where have you been watching and what have you been thinking so far?
I've been watching at home. Luckily, the past couple of days, it's been great because it hasn't lined up with any baseball games. Yesterday, somewhat, it overlapped with the Cubs game. But I have been thinking that this is a very good Vegas team. And I know...
We know that going in?
We did. And I hope Blackhawks fans knew that and they still know that because... That was a game in which the Blackhawks made some adjustments. They increased their physicality. They shot the puck. Maybe not as much as everyone would have liked to. Maybe not as much as they would have liked to. But they made some improvements, and they still couldn't come away with a win. So that's what goes to show you how good this Vegas team is and how little room for error there is for this Blackhawks team in order to move forward.
They played their best period of the series. Unfortunately, there have been six periods plus so far. In that second period, in which they rallied from a 2-0 deficit and 3-2 deficits to tie, got going with what they really wanted to do, whether that was a case of them imposing their will or perhaps Vegas taking its foot off the gas a little bit with what they do so well. But that was an encouraging sign. And, you know, perhaps a couple days from now when we do our next podcast, we'll be thinking this was the game that they needed to get one shot away. Be it third period, be it overtime, to try to make it a series. And now the real challenge for this team is going to be with back-to-backs on Saturday and Sunday as we record here on Friday afternoon, which is the off day between games 2 and 3. Back-to-backs Saturday and Sunday against a team that they have gone 1-8-2 all time against right now. Actually, I think that's inaccurate, too. I think they've only had one shootout or overtime loss against the Vegas Golden Knights. So it has been a challenge all 3 years that Vegas is in the league with their style and how the Blackhawks' makeup and approach is. That third period, that second period was one to really hang your hat on. But again, there have been six-plus periods so far, and Vegas just seems like they can flip a switch whenever they want to, especially against this Blackhawks team. It may be different against the likes of Colorado, some of the other higher echelon teams in the Western Conference. But when they want to get going, it seems like they have the will and the ability to do that.
Well, and they showed that in period three and in overtime and somewhat in period one, but I guess that's just getting off to a better start than the Blackhawks did. You keep bringing up the second period being the most promising one, and it's true because, heck, after that first 20 minutes, Hawks are down 2-0. I'm thinking they've got no business coming back in this game. But they did. I mean, they made a lot of improvements. Guys were more physical. You saw more traffic towards the net. You saw shots a little bit lower on Robin Leonard because what was the big part of concern in game one was there weren't enough rebounds, there weren't enough second opportunities for the Blackhawks. Their lone goal came on that shorthanded beauty by Brandon Saad to, was it Kampf scoring it? Or
Yeah, so in game one, right?
So, I mean, that was just something that sparked up. That happened in the second period and the final closing seconds when Patrick Kane and Dylan Strome and Alex DeBrincat are coming down and they finally get that beautiful tic-tac-toe, you know, Blackhawks highlight reel goal. But they rely on those sometimes too much that they forget the fundamentals, and I know we've had this conversation multiple times, but it just comes out to be the case. I mean, that first period, you see Dylan Strome just passing on an opportunity to shoot the puck. Same thing with
Alex
Nylander.
As the whole city of Chicago shouts, shoot!
And you know what? I don't want to constantly use that argument, but in game one, when Robin Leonard's blade is off his skate, if there's any time to justify the meatball approach of shoot the puck, it's right then and there. Put some pressure on the guy, give him some traffic, and for some reason, they just, again, tried to get too cute with it. But again, yes, there were a lot of improvements. That's the type of game that you hope these young guys really benefited from. And again, this whole playoff scenario is beneficial for these young players. And it really stinks that that's what we're getting to now. It's not how can they advance, how can they move forward. Sure, they can. They have an opportunity to. But again, I think the way they adjusted, the way they improved in game two still wasn't enough, shows you how much of an uphill battle it is to beat the Vegas Golden Knights.
They got some guys going. We were waiting for Patrick Kane to kind of hit the smelling salts, and he certainly did that as he was playmaking with three assists in game number two. Dylan Strome, one of these guys a little bit further down in the lineup, whether he is top six or top nine. He certainly had his best game of the postseason after that failure to shoot in the first period, but he seemed to get things together and almost won it. He dinged one off the post there in overtime. He actually raised his stick thinking that was the game winner. So the Blackhawks had a few more guys going, but you mentioned the starts of games, and the first periods here have been practically repeats of themselves, where the Hawks play well for the first 5 to 10 minutes or so. They're carrying play. I think they had four shots in the first 4 minutes of game one. They had a nice solid start in game two on Thursday night. But then we talked about the flip switch ability of Vegas. It seems like all of a sudden they hit the midway point of the first period and the ice just tilts in Vegas's direction as they seem, when they want to take control against this Blackhawks team, they're certainly able to do that. And then they scored two goals in less than 5 minutes to take that 2-0 lead. The Blackhawks have never led in this series, and fighting uphill as they have the entire series, never having the lead, at best tied, that's a tough battle when you're going up against this Vegas team, because what George McPhee and Kelly McCrimmon and the Vegas Golden Knights management did in constructing this team, which made the Stanley Cup final in their first year of existence 3 years ago, and they were dealt kind of a bad hand last year in the playoffs with that controversial call against San Jose. But here they are again. They didn't really get some traction earlier in the season. That's why they made a coaching move that opened a lot of eyes in getting rid of Gerard Gallant and bringing Peter DeBoer aboard. But it has certainly helped them to this point. And it's a massive undertaking the Blackhawks have now, down two games. Now, you mentioned the second period. Let's hear from a couple of the guys afterwards about what happened when the Blackhawks played so well in that second period to tie the game at three, but then over the last 27 minutes and 13 seconds until Vegas finally scored the game winner, the Blackhawks were outshot by a total of 23-7. Here's Dominic Kubalik and Patrick Kane.
I thought we were playing really well the first two periods, and you know, for whatever reason, it just seemed like they came out better than us in the third. I don't know if we thought it was going to be a little bit easier than it was, especially after we tied it up, but they're a good team. They're going to fight back, and they carried the play for most of that third, so we didn't really generate much.
They're doing a pretty good job, like in their zone especially, that they're pretty tight. You know, it's hard. Like, we knew it's going to be a battle, but you still got to find a way to, you know, to get the shots through and get those rebounds and get some greasy goals, because that's the time when you build the momentum for a game. So you just got to be better with that.
Joe, the great news is the Blackhawks got themselves to that position where they were one shot away from winning it in the third and overtime. But I don't know if we ever really got that sense. You clung to that hope, but the way Vegas is able to, you know, impose their will and their style on the Blackhawks in this particular matchup, it was almost like you were on ice. You know, you were grabbing anything you could to hang on and hope Lady Luck would come through for you, but it just wasn't to be. And I'm starting to wonder whether Riley Smith is Vladimir Tarasenko dressed up in a Vegas Golden Knights uniform, because he absolutely kills the Blackhawks. Three goals in this series so far, along with he had an assist last night, so 5 points in the first two games for his career against the Blackhawks. He has 11 goals and 20 points in 20 games, and that's a second-line guy. That second line of Riley Smith, Paul Stastny and Jonathan Marchessault has been absolutely dynamite against the Blackhawks far the first two games.
And another thing to bring up, I mean, didn't the Vegas Golden Knights not have their top two scorers for the majority of the game yesterday?
Max Pacioretty was...
Unfit to play.
Yeah, returned for game number one, and then they decided to scratch him for game number two. The fact that Vegas is able to get out to a two-game stun lead without their leading scorer, who had 32 goals, 66 points, led the team in those categories, is another bit of humble pie for the Blackhawks.
Well, when Vegas nearly won the Stanley Cup in their first year of existence, the common question was, how is a franchise able to be this good so quickly? And somebody broke it down once that made the most sense to me was that you get your picking from every other team, and you pick kind of a middle-tier guy. You're not going to get the superstar from every team. You're not going to get Patrick Kane or Jonathan Toews, but you're not going to get a fourth-line guy either. You get kind of a middle-tier guy. That's what their team was built on from the get-go, and that's why they're able to be so deep, because they have just a very deep roster, guys that do the fundamentals, and they all come together somewhat with the same style of game, or at least a way to mesh all together, and that's why they've been able to be successful their first 3 years in existence. That's why they're able to be so deep. But going back to it in game two, how I said I thought the Blackhawks had no business in coming back in that game. That's because the first goal, okay, Lucas Carlson makes a mistake, but that's still a manufactured goal by Vegas. It's a good heads-up play to go in the crease and figure something out. Goal number two is another one that you wish Corey Crawford mm-hmm. had. It's probably a goal that he wishes he had. And I'm not here to bash Corey Crawford, because after that, he looked great, and he's the goaltender you want. He's the goaltender you need in the situation. But at that point, it's like, okay, they've got all the momentum. It's difficult for the Blackhawks just to get on a run right now, and they were able to do that in the second period. But here we are again talking about needing that constant approach, 60 minutes, shooting the puck, staying aggressive. I know they're playing a more conservative style against Vegas as opposed to Edmonton, but when you've got the puck, you still have to be aggressive.
Golden Knights, if you give them an inch, they will pounce on it. And there have been a number of Blackhawks who have given that inch, and they have paid the price. In Corey Crawford's case, it's probably three goals this series so far that he probably would like to have back. You mentioned the second one in game number two. There were a couple in game number one as well, and that's a little bit disappointing from what we saw in game number four against Edmonton. We thought Corey was beginning to find his mojo, but the other thing that Vegas does, when you look at the hits totals in the first two games, and this is nothing unusual. This is what they do. They just grind you down. 35 hits in game number one, and game number two they had 38 hits. Now the Blackhawks, you know, they responded with some physicality of their own when it comes to that particular stat. But you also look at what Vegas, you know, and the Blackhawks got away with this in game number two on Thursday. So far through five games, the round robin and the first two games of this series, they've outscored their opponents 10-1 in the third period. Now, the Blackhawks got away with it in the third period in game number two to push it to overtime and remain one shot away. But Kirby Dach, who became the sixth Blackhawks teenager to score a playoff goal in franchise history, Troy Murray being one of the other ones, as a matter of fact.
I heard that he didn't even remember he was a teenager.
Remember anything. I didn't remember that either, though. So I didn't even know Troy was a teenager when he made his Blackhawks debut. But a teen heartthrob, I think, is more the case. But Kirby Dach, who is going to be a Blackhawk for a long time, is going to be a Blackhawk who brings physicality just based on his frame, his stature. You know, he's going to give, he's going to take, and he talked about the nature of this Vegas Golden Knights team and their physicality and how it you have to manage that so it doesn't take a toll as the game and the series winds on.
Still got their licks in. I think we have to do a better job of being smart and protecting ourselves, but playing with more speed. The more speed we play with, I feel like our team is going to have those chances off the rush. And once we find the back of the net more times, I think we'll be all right. Obviously, it's a different team than Edmonton was, and they come at you in waves, and we did a good job of weathering the storm tonight, but we got to find a way to get more pucks towards the net and get our shots through and bang a few in, because they're pretty good at collapsing down low, and once we find our groove, I think we'll be all right as a group, but it's tough to swallow this one right now. Obviously, we have chances in overtime to put the game away, but it's not the way it went, so we got to regroup fast here because these next two games are coming up quick.
Kirby Dack, one who continues to impress, and he scored his first career playoff goal. He has done very well against the Vegas Golden Knights. If there is one Blackhawk who can put that feather in his proverbial cap, it is Kirby Dack, because he came in with 2 goals, 3 points in 3 games this season against the Vegas Golden Knights. He connects in game number 2 to bring the Blackhawks to within 2-1 at that point as part of that 3-goal second period. But again, Vegas owns, this is a team that kind of has the blueprint for what the Blackhawks struggle against, and something that's going to be a challenge to them. And actually, you know, it was something that the Blackhawks were even criticized for during their Stanley Cup runs for 3 times in 6 years. Would they be able to face up to the physicality? The one example, the prime example that showed that they could was in the 2015 Western Conference Final against Anaheim, which just hammered them time and again. I think Ryan Kessler's famous quote was, are they going to be able to withstand this over 5 or 6 games? Are they going to be able to stand? Well, they did, and they moved on to their third Stanley Cup title. But now this is also something that they're going to have to manage moving forward, and especially as you look at who the Blackhawks are on the blue line, with the exception of perhaps, you know, Connor Murphy, if Calvin DeHaan is here for another couple of years, there's not a whole lot of size there. And Vegas simply owns the middle of the ice when they are clicking. And they certainly do that against the Blackhawks. It's certainly indicative in the all-time record that they have against the Hawks. And that's part of their ability to flip the switch, their physicality, and wearing teams down. Because there have been a number of goals in this series already where they're in that area below the two face-off dots and between that and Corey Crawford, and they've been able to connect. And certainly so far, that's something that the Blackhawks have to find a way to answer.
Well, I think the biggest example of that was in Game 1. I think it was the second goal, William Carrier just busting down Matthew Highmore. And, okay, hey, these are two different-sized human beings. I get it. That's going to happen. But I believe it was the Blackhawks TV pregame show that broke it down. I think it was Steve Conroy just saying, "It's you don't have to out-hit the Vegas Golden Knights. I don't think anyone's expecting you to do that. You do have to do a better job of standing your ground, though, and just not letting that play such a factor." And I know that's easier said than done, but you bring up the Blackhawks of old. They were able to not have this huge physical presence of a team, or except for when you had your Ben Egers and your John Maddens and your Adam Burrishes and things like that, because they had so many skilled players that could just skate around and play the speed of the game. That's not quite the scenario anymore, but that was the other thing about the second period that I really liked. You saw, I mean, Connor Murphy's maybe one of their most physical guys, but you saw him turn it up a little bit more. You saw Alex DeBrincat get a little bit more physical. Kirby Dack as well, and we've talked about how he's bulked up during this hiatus, but again, that all has to continue. That all has to last for 60 minutes. The moment you take a pass away, let me take that back. The more you take just a pass off or a shift off or do anything to give Vegas an opportunity, they're going to pounce. And you have seen that, and it's at its highest example in game number 2, because the Blackhawks limited their mistakes, but they were still there. Vegas pounced, and they come away with a 2-0 lead.
This is an imposing mountain to climb with the Blackhawks facing the Vegas Golden Knights, down 2-0 in this series. That was, as we mentioned earlier, this was the one game you wanted to get in game 2 when you fought and clawed your way back to a 3-3 tie to push it to overtime after surviving a third period. But the head coach, Jeremy Colliton, this is a different beast than the Edmonton Oilers. Because Vegas, they'll just roll 4 lines. They will roll 3 defensive pairings. And he talked a little bit more after game 2 on Thursday night about what the Blackhawks are up against in going up against Vegas' style and the Hawks' ability to persist if they are to come out of this and make this a series.
They got a lot of size, and they want to play sort of that half-court game in the offensive zone. And we've got to find a way to get stops. And then when we win the puck, being clean to get out, I think it's important not to give them, you know, extra chances to have zone time. So, you know, when we were clean with it and able to advance it and drive it deep into the offensive zone, you know, get a forecheck going, get zone time, I think we had some success. But, you know, as the game, certainly in the third period, we had a little bit tougher time with that, and I thought we were a little passive, which And we're playing hard. They're a really good team, but we need to keep improving. Again, we weren't unhappy with how we played in game one. I thought we were good for a lot of the game. And same thing tonight. We just got to find a way to sustain it for the full 60 because they're a really good team and they make you work every time you're out there. Obviously, we want to hold the slot a little bit longer if we're not sure. They were able to. They got some good chances out of that for most of the game. We're pretty good. Third period, they generate a little bit more. The key is how long can we stick with it? How long can we be persistent when you face adversity? We face some adversity here over the first couple games, and do we have the character to overcome it? It's an opportunity for our guys to, I think you play all year to be in these games, so now we're here and we face some adversity. So what? Just keep playing and believe in what we're doing and believe in the guys in the room, and we're going to give them a run.
Joe, I've been meaning to mention this on the pregame show, and I haven't had the opportunity yet, but when you look at the physicality of this Vegas Golden Knights team, now if I can read my small handwriting, that's the other challenge here. William Carrier, over the course of the season, 213 hits. Ryan Reeves, 316 hits. There are a couple others here. Braden McNabb, 201 hits. They bring the lumber, and because this team is made up of a lot of guys who probably have that chip on their shoulder from the expansion draft saying, okay, you don't want to protect me. I'm not one of your best 7, 8, 9, 10 guys on your roster that you don't feel a need to protect. That entire attitude and mindset has really carried over to the nth degree with this Vegas Golden Knights team from day one. They have had that chip on their shoulder, and it, you know, it's almost kind of a mindset, an MO, if you will, about what makes them so good. And again, you don't get that with the Edmonton Oilers, and now this is an entirely different animal, entirely different beast that the Blackhawks are up against, whether they were going to face the Colorado Avalanche or the Vegas Golden Knights.
And it's an intimidation factor too. When you get an explosive team like that, constantly winning battles on the boards and out physicaling the other team, if that even is a word, it's tough. It's tough to bounce back from it. And again, the Blackhawks have shown signs that they can, but it's a matter of how often will they or prevent it. Again, you're not going to out-hit them. I think it's okay to just come to terms with that, but then you got to find a way to either just still stand your ground, withstand hits, maybe just be a little bit more on your toes. But again, then that gets in your head in terms of the rest of the game of hockey, where you're trying to set up things offensively, and we're seeing players still a little stagnant to shoot the puck because they want to make the perfect play. But it's tough to just play loose like that when you know a team that's so aggressive like Vegas is right behind you, right on the side of you almost every time you've got the puck.
Playoff hockey shows some true colors here. We're still waiting for Alex to bring it to break out, and I don't think there's any kind of intimidation factor on his part. He is just having what we were hoping was a frustrating season, not being able to the pause. It's carried over through the pause, unfortunately, for Alex DeBrincat. Is he, you know, an 18 goal guy that we saw this season? No, I think he's better than that. Is he a 40 goal guy that we saw a year ago? I'm not sure if that's going to be something you're going to see consistently. But I think Alex DeBrincat, he knows he has more he can potentially bring to the table that the Blackhawks need right now. I think it's just one of those years for Alex. Dominic Kubalik is, you know, when you look at the first couple of goals in game two, it's two rookies, Dominic Kubalik and Kirby Dach, who are able to convert, and Dylan Strome, the light finally went on for him in game two. We hadn't really seen him since the opener against Edmonton. He's been kind of quiet. So when it comes to some of these young players, you're seeing some encouraging signs. Yeah, you want to see more from an Alex Nylander if the Blackhawks still have big hopes for him, although he was demoted a bit to the fourth line in game number two. And some other guys you're hoping to step up, and the kind of players that you need during the course of a playoff run when the top guys aren't clicking necessarily. And Jeremy Collison and the coaching staff made an interesting decision for game two. Adam Boqvist has had a very bumpy and a very, I guess, 19-year-old-ish type of playoff so far. He doesn't have the frame and the stature of Kirby Dach. I'm not sure if he has the confidence and the swagger that Kirby Dach has, but he's been on that number one pairing and done, by and large, a pretty good job with Duncan Keith throughout the entire season. But I think he's learning the ropes kind of the difficult way that playoff hockey is an entirely different level, and you're going to have to be cool, calm, and collected, not be the deer in the headlights. So Jeremy Colleton, after the game, game two, he gave every indication that, that Boquist would be back for game three, get another opportunity. He just wanted to allow the kid to, take a rest, maybe watch a game from high above. Saturday will be his 20th birthday, and you hope there's a huge upside for Adam Boquist with where he was drafted. He's shown signs of that as he's, you know, primarily focused here in his rookie season on the defensive end of things. He really hasn't cut loose offensively, playing it more cautious. But Lucas Carlson got his opportunity. He was a minus two. This is what happens with young defensemen in the playoffs, especially against a team like the Vegas Golden Knights.
Well, and that's the unfortunate thing, because we brought it up earlier, that first goal, Lucas Carlson probably makes the wrong move by going to the side of the net to try and break up the play when he should have been hanging back, or at least, I mean, Eddie Ilczyk broke it down. Put your stick down, make sure that pass doesn't come up to the crease. You would think somebody like Lucas Carlson would understand to make that type of play, so it's unfortunate that that's what happens. I don't think that if Adam Boquist is in this game instead of Lucas Carlson, you're talking about a totally different outcome. There are a lot of other things that did not go in the Blackhawks' favor. I mean, you already mentioned Dylan Strome's shot that went off the post that would have probably been the game winner. There were a couple things, though. Alex DeBrincat, I mean, we've talked about his struggles. He ended up having a better game yesterday. His line had a lot of shots towards the end of the contest, but there were a few times where he had open looks, and he just kind of waysided it. So there's still a few ticks off with him. Hopefully he's turning into the right direction. Something else they broke down for the pregame show for the Hawks was, again, I think it was Steve Conroy saying...
Wait, you're not listening to the radio pregame
show? Oh, I switch back and forth. You know that. No, I do. I seriously do. I seriously have my computer on, and when they go to break, I listen to you. When you go to break, I listen to them.
Okay.
Sorry, I don't have as many examples to show. Wow, you really put me on the spot here. He was talking about Duncan Keith's ability with Adam Boquist opposed to somebody else. And he said when he's on the same defensive line with Boquist, he's a little more hesitant to get things going because he's working with a 19-year-old. You get Duncan Keith maybe playing his more style of game when you get more of a veteran alongside with him. I guess you maybe saw that. It's Jeremy Colleton's decision. The other thing, I did like the line changes they had with moving Highmore up. You kind of credit him for what he's done in these playoffs so far. You get that Dylan Strome, Alex DeBrincat chemistry a little bit back. You did see it, especially on that goal in the end of the second period. But I'm glad that Colleton is making these moves and making these steps based on the performances in the previous games.
We're going to start calling this the BBB podcast. Bustin' Brands. We'll leave out the final B and let everybody figure that out.
I will not be watching any pregame of TV for the next...
That's okay. I go back and watch it myself. That's what DVRs are for. So in any event, Blackhawks in a huge hole here. We knew this was going to be a challenge when the Blackhawks drew the Vegas Golden Knights, whether it was them or the Colorado Avalanche. They're just two different beasts from what we saw from the Edmonton Oilers. And the Blackhawks and their leadership group found a way to get past that for a qualifying round to get into the first round of the playoffs. But again, when you're the low seed and you draw the top seed or one of the high seeds, these are some of the challenges that you are facing. And they are down 2-0. After the off day Friday, they will get back at it with back-to-back on Saturday and Sunday. For those of you who listen to the radio, it's a 6:30 pregame on Saturday before John and Troy have the puck drop at 7 o'clock.
If we're throwing out plugs, I will be hosting from 6 to 6:30 tomorrow.
There you go.
After White Sox Weekly. So
don't
yes.
ask me to come on though. I'll be busy. All right.
That's fair. Yep. I deserve that.
Yep. And then,
I'll see if Conroy's available. Is it?
Oh, just kidding. 7 o'clock puck drop on Saturday for game number three, and then game four will be right back at it on Sunday afternoon. And let's hope the Blackhawks can find a way to at least push this series. I think this would be a great thing for them if they find a way to do that. Disappointing that they couldn't get it done in game two when that golden opportunity was there against the Golden Knights. Sorry, folks. And let's see if they can make this five or six at least. The goal is still to win a series, but we've seen the way the Golden Knights operate, and right now you just want to. You're looking to make it competitive. Let them fight a little bit. if they're going to advance and move on. So we will see if the Blackhawks are able to do that in game Saturday and Sunday. By the way, that game Sunday, never got around to it, will be a 5 o'clock pregame on 720 WGN, and John and Troy will have the call at 5:30. Any final thoughts to add here, baseball podcast boy?
Just the fact that game two seemed like it really could have been the game three of the Edmonton series, where it really could have been a swing game to really take the wind out of the sails of Vegas, but they did prevail. That a big reason of that is because they're the better team, so just keep that in mind, Blackhawks fans, that this is a very good Vegas team that the Hawks are up against. Just one last shout-out. Please listen to the WGN pregame 6:30 tomorrow.
He's scrambling now.
But information and entertainment with Chris Bowden and Troy Murray.
And listen to Joe Brand on...
Sure, if you feel like you should come around to it. Saturday at 6 o'clock. Mark Carmen and I will be hosting White Sox Weekly before that, if there's any Sox fans out there listening. But I will do the
pregame. And you're Sunday mornings, right? Sunday
mornings. No, Saturday mornings. Oh, man.
So,
all right, now I don't feel so bad.
Now I get it back. I get it back after that. So we will come at you again if the Blackhawks extend this series, perhaps after game four. If they are unable to extend the series, we will come at you with a fresh podcast probably the next day or so once they are eliminated. I would imagine if it does come to that at some point next week, we will hear from Stan Bowman, Jeremy Colleton, perhaps some of the players as things wrap up. But let's not take it to that. Let's not have that mindset. Let's hope the Blackhawks find a way to extend the series and make things interesting as they fall behind 2-0 to the Vegas Golden Knights in this first-round playoff series. I want to thank our producer, Curtis Koch, as well as Ernie Skatton. Thank you for listening as well. Again, we'll keep you up to date on when we're coming at you next on WGNRadio.com. I'm at Bowden Tweets on Twitter. Joe is at Joe_Brand1 on Twitter. So, again, we will put you on high alert for the next time we have a Blackhawks Crazy podcast coming your way. We thank you for joining us on this one. Have a great weekend, everyone.
How about that?
He's won it.
The Hawks win the Stanley Cup.
Thanks for listening to the Blackhawks Crazy podcast. Tell a friend, subscribe, and join the conversation. And follow the guys on Twitter at Bowden Tweets and at Joe_Brand1.
That was great.